the end of a stimulating month here at the Capitol Dome. May is unlike any other month at the state capitol, as far as I can tell. The legislature is busy hammering out a new budget. They're considering a prevailing wage repeal and getting to know a presidential candidate or two along the way. Here to review what's been going on in May, Tim Skubick, Capitol correspondent and host of Off the Record, seen on WKAR-TV. Welcome back home.
Thank you. Nice to be back with you, man.
After a few days up at the island. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Let's not.
And just before <laughs> he calls it a career at Bloomberg, we welcome Chris Kristof to Current States Month in Review. Good to have you along.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Tim, you were on Mackinac the first day or thereabouts of the policy conference. What were people talking about?
Everything. If you love to schmooze, you've done this gig.
Many times.
Yeah. If you love to schmooze, this is the place to be.
We know you're at Mackinac. We can smell it on your shoes.
I thought I took care of that before I came in the studio, but thanks for the heads up, okay? Basically, let me tell you my strategy for covering that conference. I basically ignore what is on the agenda, and I go up there and try to play journalist and find out news and stuff that's going on.
Understood.
And one of the major stories was the pipeline story, and the environmentalists had the audacity to get up in the middle of one of the governor's one of his speeches about how great Michigan is, and complain to him about this allegedly unsafe pipeline under the Straits of Mackinac. And the governor responded to them by saying, we're on top of this, and I agree with your concerns. He didn't like the way that they protested, and the protesters were escorted out of the Grand Hotel. It was great TV. It was great TV. They have this this guy with his arm on this woman, just making sure she keeps running and out. And they took her off the property, and the property doesn't end until that little French bar down at the end. So they had quite a ways to walk.
Yeah.
So the pipeline turned out to be one of the interesting stories out of there, and clearly that was not on the Chamber of Commerce's agenda.
Did it generate much talk?
Yeah, I think it did. It gave me an opportunity to talk to Dan Wyatt, who is the DEQ, Department of Equality, or not Equality, Environmental Quality. And I said, look, is this pipeline safe? And his first answer was yes, based on the premise that it's been there for 60 years and nothing has happened. And then I said, well, then is the pipeline safe? And he said, well, we don't know. So you can pick your answer out of there wherever you want to go.
He and Attorney General Schuette apparently are putting together a report that is due
next month.
Yep. At some point.
They've been at this thing for quite a while.
Well, you give them credit. It certainly brought public awareness to something that almost nobody knew existed.
Yes. Can you imagine, not predicting this, but if that thing pops in the Straits of Mackinac, we're looking at an environmental disaster of the likes of which we've never seen.
Right. Where is the legislature on it, though? Is this falling on deaf ears, or is there concern?
Probably unaware also.
Well, there was some chatter that maybe they might look into this.
They might
look into it.
Mayor Duggan is arguably a high-profile Democrat. He was there at the opening. He's got some political momentum these days, and a platform and a spotlight is on him. Where does his what do you make of his again declaring his non-candidacy for governor, Chris?
Yeah, again, right after he was elected. Mayor, and it may have been the night he was elected or a subsequent press conference, he told the press that this is the last elected office that I will ever run for. He said that. Didn't get widely reported. And he's been adamant about that. And ever since he got elected, people have talked about him running for governor.
Precisely.
It's been nonstop. He was almost testy about it in his response.
Oh, the chattering classes will not let it go.
He would not run. By mouth, anyway, took himself out of the running.
He was in town on Tuesday. He was in Representative Grimmel's office, the House Democrat, and I found out he was there, so I took my camera guy, and we just waited outside the door to ambush him. So he walks out the door. First thing he says, you're not going to ask me about running for governor, right? I said, Mr. Mayor, I've done the story. You've told me a thousand. He says, I've told you for 8 years, Skubick, I'm not running. And I take him at his word. But there are still people that will say the next governor's race is a long ways off, and what happens between now and then. And if the D's don't have any strong candidate, they may go to this guy and say, you got to do it.
That's my question. Yeah. I mean, it is arguably way too early to even be posing this question, but where would a Duggan non-candidacy leave the Democrats?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know who else is on the bench.
Gretchen Whitmer?
Well, Gretchen Whitmer, you know, you wonder about her. I mean, it was talked about when she left that she was term limited, but preparing in absentia for a future run. And,
yes.
And that name definitely will come up. And
definitely.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Mark Schauer, I don't think, no. I don't think that's
I don't know of any of the congressional delegations. Gary Peters, I can't imagine him wanting to give up
Debbie
Senate Stavenow seat to do
give
that.
Up the Senate seat? No.
Yeah. So they're kind of thin in the ranks right now.
Chris Christoph of Bloomberg, Tim Skubick of WKAR-TV and Public Television's Off the Record, our guests here today on Current States Month in Review. Let's spend a few minutes on the budget broadly, but on the roads piece in particular. Late last week, a special state House committee opened hearings on how to raise more than $1 billion for roads and transportation. Here's how Republican State Rep Jeff Farrington described the situation.
The legislature is ready for it. You know, we realize we haven't stepped up as much as we had to, and we're really ready to make sure that we make the commitment to the residents of the state of Michigan that they deserve.
Let's go to both of you and find out where you think that the roads discussion is right now.
Well,
Chris,
does that commitment mean we're going to raise taxes? And, you know, right now all roads point to that as the only way to do it. The governor still backs that. Apparently the Senate leadership still backs that. The House came out with a plan that would fund it largely by cutting other areas of state government that's probably not feasible. I mean, any analyst will tell you that to get $1.2 billion to fund roads, you're going to have to raise taxes somehow. And the House isn't there yet.
And I think the Speaker, in his quiet moments, will reflect on that. He did open the door a little wider on the island. In his initial news conference, the question was asked about a revenue increase. He says, I will not take anything off the table. I realize that we're going to have to compromise. So that was his opening salvo.
This is Speaker Cotter.
Speaker Cotter. And then on the island, he went a little further to say, well, maybe we might have to eventually end up there. And if we need be, I'll participate in those talks. I think the popular wisdom is the House will send the Senate something that maybe has a little new revenue in it and keep their fingers crossed that the Senate adds a little more money to it.
Does the GOP, how badly does the GOP need the Democrats to pass some kind of plan?
Well, they have the majority. They have a clear majority to do it. I mean, that's where leadership comes in. If they and the governor, I mean, if they decide on some kind of formula that involves a tax increase, they'd better bring along their own. The tussle between the Democrats and Republicans is what produced the camel of a ballot proposal that we had. and you'd hope that they all finally set aside the rivalries and who's going to stick who, you know, to come up with a unified plan. Do they need the Democrats? Well, we'll see what the plan is, but you'd think they would all learn after what happened after that debacle that they try to get along with a plan that they both can back.
I see MERS asked Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff if the Senate GOP needed Democrats in order to advance a road funding plan, and part of Meekhoff's answer was, there's a Democrat road plan?
No. Well, there isn't.
I think the D's
deserve from some corners some criticism for sitting on the sidelines and taking pot shots at what the Republicans have offered without putting forth a plan of their own. Now, they're going to say, we're not controlling the legislature. We don't have the governor's office. We don't run the House and Senate. Why should we put forth a plan? You know, we're a minority party here. So we'll see how that plays out. I think there is some thinking in the Democratic ranks that maybe they ought to get in the game with some skin of their own.
What about economic development money, though, here? People are looking at MEDC funding here to help as part of this solution.
That's been a target of conservatives for a long time who think the state shouldn't be picking, quote, winners and losers when it comes to promoting business development here. The governor wants to keep it. He says if we unilaterally disarm this part of government that helps attract businesses, that we're going to lose businesses to other states. So there's a battle within the Republican Party over that.
And film incentives were a topic of discussion already, before the defeat of Proposal 1. Where is that $50 million film incentive number today?
It's six.
$6 million from 50
cents.
It might as well be.
It's got one foot on a banana peel and the other one in the grave. Yeah, this is on its way out. There's no question about it.
Politically, how does that break down? Is that just a Republican majority? And is it a party line breakdown there?
For the most part, it probably is. Again, there probably are some Democrats also who might feel that it's a waste of money. I mean, look, this issue has been studied and debated not only in Michigan, but if you look nationally, I mean, there's only 13 states that don't have any kind of film incentive, and that goes back and forth. Some of them do it in a huge way, and the arguments. You can pick either side that it does promote economic development or that it never pays for itself in terms of tax revenue. In other words, you're going to always pay out more to the film industry than you're going to get back in revenue.
The other part of the argument that some make is there's also a halo effect by doing this. It's not all about the dollars and cents. It's about the fact that Michigan becomes a player in this field and people feel good about that. And they're coming in and discovering the state. But I look at this is on a road to... what was that movie? Attrition.
Or Perdition.
Crosby,
I don't know, whatever.
That was it. Crosby and Hope movie there. Yeah.
There was this funny story. And you're talking about other states. In Maryland, you know, they filmed the Netflix series House of Cards
right.
in Maryland. And the company, Netflix, was demanding more money for an incentive, and the state didn't want to give it to him. You had Kevin Spacey, the star of it, lobbying legislators in bars in Annapolis for the money.
For the money.
And they didn't give it to him, and then they decided to give him a little less than they could. But they were threatening to pull out. And these are the kinds of things that you get. You get whipsawed by the production companies, and they're only going to go to the states that provide the big incentives. It's like a hot air balloon. When you cut off the fire, the balloon goes down.
There's an interesting twist on this story. The governor's daughter is in the film business, and he says she's getting some flack because the old man's trying to get rid of the tax credit.
How interesting. Tim Skubick of Michigan Public Television, Chris Kristof of Bloomberg, our guests here today on Current States Month in Review. In late April, Republican State Rep Al Pasholka talked up the education budget that the House passed, calling it the biggest school aid budget ever. What do we know about education spending for next year?
$15 billion tab now. That is the largest that it's ever been. And,
times have changed.
Well, times have changed. Look, I'm on my way out. I've been covering this thing for 28 years. And the problems with education seem intractable. How you improve things, is it a money issue? Is it a training issue? What seems to be the emphasis all the time here is how much money can we throw at it?
And the 2% is, the educators will say, doesn't even keep pace with inflation, and higher ed got 1.5
right.
Increase, and they're grumbling about that.
Yeah, but nobody, we're unable to step back from it and say, okay, if I wanted to create a statewide education system, here's $15 billion. How do you do it? Well, unfortunately, we can't start from scratch here, so they're trying to, cobble together the best they can in an existing system that some people say is wasteful, others say doesn't pay enough. Personally, I think teachers ought to be paid as much as we possibly can, but where is that money going, and what are the results of it? And the results of it are not that good in many areas.
For several years, Democrats blasted the GOP over education cuts, though. Have the Republicans effectively taken a key grievance away from the Democrats?
Well, we had a referendum on this in the last governor's race, and you know who won.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Schauer beat that drum pretty loud and all over the state, and it didn't seem to resonate with voters. Certainly didn't put him over the top.
Yeah.
We spent a good deal of time discussing prevailing wage repeal on this program. The Senate passed a repeal measure recently. It's gone to the House, where... What is happening?
It's on hold. The manna from heaven, the petition drive to put this on the ballot has taken the House Republicans off the hook. Now they don't have to do anything. They can sit back and wait and see if the petition drive is successful. By the way, when I talked to the governor on the island, he says that drive will be divisive. He doesn't like it. He's opposed to the petition drive. He understands it's part of the democracy. But now House Republicans don't have to do anything unless they get the signatures to put it back in the House. So it's on hold in the House for right now.
And clarify something, please. Is Governor Snyder's opposition what triggered the citizen initiative?
Well,
because
tell
that
you,
would
sidestep
the
that
governor.
It wasn't, but you have to believe that was a factor. I mean, if they had the secure votes, why would they even bother with a very expensive and
Mr. Kristof is always right.
Well, so this wouldn't be happening if the governor had supported it.
I don't
basically.
Think so.
No, there'd
okay.
be no need to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Early last week, the governor issued a special message on criminal justice. It encapsulated what he called a get-smart approach to crime in Michigan. Here's Governor Snyder.
There is this whole cycle of everything from lack of employment opportunities to poverty to so many different issues to family situations that contribute to this that you need to address every part of the cycle if you really want to make a difference.
What would you make of the criminal justice message?
Stop throwing so many people in prison.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the argument and the issue we've heard for decades. You know, how do you, in words of some, how do you define the difference between people that you're mad at and people that are dangerous?
Mm-hmm. The enormity of the corrections budget, though, yeah. is a big issue here
it
as well.
It keeps growing
though.
And growing and growing.
$2 billion plus a year, I believe.
Yeah, we spend more on that than on education, on higher education.
And it's now up to $38,000 a year for every inmate.
Is something going to give on this front, do you think?
I talked to the governor about this, and he acknowledges that when you start talking about letting people out of prison, the average person goes, aha, all these crooks are going to go back on the street and they're going to shoot at me. And he acknowledges that as the hump that he has to get over in selling this in the legislature, because lawmakers hear that same stuff. The case he thinks can be made and was made during lame duck to change the parole system so that when you hit your minimum date of your sentence and you got a good record, get them out of the prison, okay? Mr. Hoffman, the chairman of House Appropriations, had it this close before Bill yeah. Schuette, the attorney general, got in, started working the floor, and that thing went up in flames. So here we go, repeat, redo, with Mr. Schuette maybe taking on this Republican governor on the very same issue. Big question.
Then we have a new corrections director.
Yep.
And you have to address the issue of recidivism. Once they're out, what do you do to keep them from coming back into the system? That's a huge issue.
The number now is 33% coming back, which is not bad, but
that's too much. That's part of the big cost. They keep returning.
We are talking with Heidi Washington about coming on Current State here in just a couple of weeks here, too, by the way, the incoming corrections director. Governor Jeb Bush visited Lansing and East Lansing yesterday. Here's a little bit of Mr. Bush's remarks from last evening at Eagle Eye in East Lansing.
We need to go to the places where the voters are. There are a whole lot of conservatives, they just don't know it yet. And if we do that, we will win. And if we win, we need to bring the country together again. I don't know about you, but I'm sick and tired of presidents and other political leaders pushing people down to make themselves look better. Always explaining why they can't do things. It's as though the dog ate their homework each and every day. And the divide in our country is quite dangerous.
Chris, you were there last night. What'd you make overall of Jeb Bush's visit?
He says he wants to be the candidate who can appeal to young people. He can appeal to disaffected people who he thinks are conservative in their hearts with his conservative message that he'll appeal to. Latino voters. I mean, this is a guy who's got a proven track record of appealing to Hispanic Latino voters as governor in Florida, and that's a big plus with him. But he says we have to go to places that haven't supported us in the past.
We're just about out of time. You guys have had your eyes on this landscape a long time. Is there a Republican amongst the 8 declared candidates that you think might especially resonate here in Michigan for any particular reason?
Well, Jeb Bush is approachable.
Yes,
he's approachable. Mm-hmm. There's some guys and ladies out on the campaign trail that you just figure, well, I better not get in their personal space
because
they might hurt me. Okay, yeah. And he's like his brother, good sense of humor. When he was in town a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, whenever it was, I said, so how many times do you get the question? All right, and he said, you mean how the Buccaneers are going to do this year, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's a football team,
yes,
for those of you that don't know, okay, down in Florida. And so he's an engaging guy. He's got an interesting message. He is different from all the rest in that he's a little more of a centrist than the other candidates so far.
We will leave it there. We want to wish Chris Kristof all the best of luck, who is calling it a career. When exactly, Chris?
June 19th, the last day.
June 19th is it? After many, many years at the Detroit Free Press.
I have a bad case of senioritis.
Many years at the Detroit Free Press and more recently at Bloomberg. Chris, best of luck to
you. So
many
much.
Thanks for joining us today.
And great working with you those 28 years,
likewise,
man.
Likewise, Tim.
Tim Skubick, all the best. Thank you.